This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is California representative and farmer Doug LaMalfa, member of the House Ag Committee, joins us in just a moment. Another step toward bringing high-speed internet to rural communities and businesses, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
We are focused on expanding significantly opportunities for farmers to have more and new and better markets. Part of that opportunity is in the form of developing climate smart commodities, opportunities where producers across the country, crop farmers, livestock producers, can essentially reduce their greenhouse gas emissions or sequester carbon, and in doing so, create a market, added value market opportunity for their farming operation. To do that is going to require a lot of technology that will absolutely depend on high-speed internet.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Doug LaMalfa, who represents the 1st Congressional District of California, is a member of the House Ag Committee, also natural resources, I think transportation and infrastructure. And could you not figure out a way to get like three or four more committees in there?
Yeah, it's plenty to do. As I'm supposed to be in a committee right now, so we'll have to knock this out quick. But there's plenty going on. But they're all good committees that are very aligned with what our district needs and, you know, the type of rural nature of it and industry we have there or would like to have there.
One of the issues you've seen in your district is devastating wildfires. There's also been some flooding through parts of the state as well.
Locusts, you know, I mean, what?
You've got plenty of challenges there.
We can handle challenges if we can just get cooperation from government entities to help us do them. It really isn't that hard when we can set our mind to doing the work that needs to be done.
And water, is there a solution to making sure the state has the water it needs, especially for ag?
Well, there used to be forward-thinking folks that built the Central Valley Project back in the 30s and such, and then the State Water Project really got a lot of momentum in the 60s with two of the big projects in my district are Lake Shasta, 4.5 million acre feet, Lake Oroville, 3.5 million acre feet, and those are kind of the mainstays of California's stored water supply, and there's other good ones as well. And we were fortunate this year, we had so much snowpack and rainfall that we basically filled those reservoirs up, as well as Folsom and San Luis Reservoir and several others, so everything's doing pretty good. New Malonas is about, I think, 80%. It's a little harder to fill. One of the maddening ones is the Trinity up there, and they let so much water out, it's probably going to be lucky to hit 80% of capacity. And so it's a battle of not only building the storage, but you know, also keeping the water for a use that's actually useful for a lot more people.
I know you're pretty passionate about management of forest. You've lost a community or two in your district in the past. Is that something you've teed up for this Congress?
Well, I'm glad to be the the chairman of the Subcommittee on Forestry and Agriculture, and that has direct oversight of U.S. Forest Service, which is a big part of the problem of them not moving at what we call the pace and scale they should be on managing those lands. And so many of the fires that start in those lands become giant conflagrations, you know, which the Dixie Fire of 2 years ago burned 1 million acres in my district. It kind of picked up where the campfire, which burned Paradise, it started just a few miles from the origin of the campfire. It burned north, and the campfire one burned more or less west and devoured about 90% of the town of Paradise. The Dixie Fire burned about 75% of the town of Greenville and all the town of Canyon Dam nearby. And there's so many of these stories. You know, we had the Beckworth Fire farther over on the east that, you know, ate a lot of houses over there and property. And, of course, all these are burning up the people's assets, their national forests. And the downside, not only that, of them being gone is the loss of habitat, the wildlife, the effect it has on our watersheds with all the ash, and then later erosion. You know, when you lose all this, you get erosion on these hills, and so it turns into mud and gets in the streams and gets eventually into the water supply in some of our lakes. In some cases, it could even block the ability for the hydroelectric plants to operate as it blocks off the penstocks. So positive forest management has so many good things to it. The only thing it doesn't please is the environmental groups that don't seem to want any of it to happen.
Last one here for you. It's 2023, mm-hmm. time to write a new farm bill or reauthorize a farm bill. What are you watching there?
Well, as a member of the Ag Committee, we've been active getting around the country, having a lot of listening sessions. Our chairman, G.T. Thompson's been doing an excellent job of coordinating, pulling that together. I've been on several of the stops, not every single one, but Pennsylvania and Connecticut and Texas and Oregon, Central California. Some of these are also hearings on forestry as well, so I'm kind of blending them. But it's all important to the product that we need to get out this year. We don't want to have a, you know, a failure in getting the farm bill. So Chairman Thompson and all of us are very focused on being successful getting something out of the House, you know, maybe by the end of July, and that'll give enough time before the turns into a pumpkin in September, you know, at the end of September. And because we don't want that to lapse. If it lapses, then we have to either do a stopgap temporary measure, or if it reverts back to the law, the bill not being renewed, then it goes back to 30s Dust Bowl era type backup legislation, which won't be very good for anybody the way that works. So so we're optimistic that we're going to get there. There doesn't seem to be any pushback from any groups on going forward. You know, we have to get Democrats and Republicans to agree on it. The Dems are always really focused on the social side of it, meaning the SNAP program, which is about 82% of the funding of the farm bill. And, you know, it needs to be renewed as well, and we need to do a good job of that. But like any program, it's also proper for us to look at are things needed to make it work better, and the people that are truly eligible are the ones that benefit best. Then, you know, other parts include the conservation piece and actually the production ag part, which is what keeps farmers farming. And, you know, so crop insurance is very important. Disaster relief is offset if you have more and more crop insurance. More specialty crops want to be included in that. We want to have a good safety net for that. Our walnut growers from California, for example, had a really bad year last year. So we want to have them be able to be in the safety net so they don't have to come hat in hand for help on recovering from that. So we're helping them right now, but going forward, you just want to have a strong net for everybody.
So good to see you. Thanks for your time.
Well, thanks for having
me. I know it's a busy time for you, so come back and see us, will you?
Yeah, it's a little crazy lately, but it's good. I think we're getting good things done. You know, we got this debt limit stuff behind us, and now we can focus back on the things that are really going to advance good policy once again. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's the Honorable Doug LaMalfa, representing the 1st Congressional District of California, joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
At Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, our mission is to ensure the long-term profitability of our grower owners through value-added marketing programs and through services to their gins. As a true cooperative, we pay dividends back to our grower owners to financially strengthen their farming operations, whether in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or New Mexico. Rest assured, at PCCA, we make money for you, not from you.
American agriculture creates millions of jobs all the while feeding and clothing the world. But with many policymakers so removed from the farm, attacks on farm policy threaten our livelihood and quality of life in rural America. Our strength is our willingness to work together for the benefit of all. That's why business and farm leaders have formed the Southwest Council of Agribusiness to defend the bedrock of our economy and our way of life. This is Larry Combest. The Southwest Council of Agribusiness is at southwest-council.com.
The Agribusiness Report. Devlin Hartline is a legal fellow at the Hudson Institute on the right to repair.
I'd like to start with a question posed by the title of this hearing. Is there a right to repair? And the answer is clearly no. A right is a legally enforceable claim against another, but the courts have not recognized that manufacturers have the duty to help consumers make repairs. Instead, the courts have said that while we have the ability to repair our things, we also have the duty not to infringe the IP rights in the process. So it is, in fact, the manufacturers who have the relevant rights, not consumers. Right to repair supporters want lawmakers to force manufacturers to make the tools, parts, and know-how needed to facilitate repairs available to consumers and independent repair shops. And the assumption here is that anything standing in the way of repair opportunities must necessarily harm the public good. But these tools, parts, and know-how are often protected by IP rights, such as copyrights and design patents. And we protect copyrighted works and patented inventions because, as the Constitution recognizes, this promotes the public good. We reward creators and innovators as an incentive for them to bring these things to the marketplace. And the public benefits from the introduction of new products and services that increase competition. Thus, the right to repair movement isn't based on a pre-existing right. It's instead asking lawmakers to create a new right at the expense of the existing rights of IP owners. And there have been several bills introduced at the federal level, and they generally take one of two approaches. So the first is to rewrite the Copyright Act or the Patent Act in a way that directly limits IP rights. So this is the approach with the SMART Act and the Freedom to Repair Act. The second approach is to define the normal exercise of IP rights as an unfair or deceptive practice to be enforced by the FTC. This is the Repair Act and the Fair Repair Act. Of course, the FTC already has the authority to address unfair or deceptive trade practices. And it's noteworthy that even after promising to crack down on this 2 years ago, the FTC has not brought such an enforcement action against a manufacturer, though it has brought a few actions related to warranties. So I submit that the reason for this is simple. IP owners are merely exercising their federally protected IP rights, and this is not actionable anti-competitive conduct. It is instead how the IP system is supposed to work. We grant IP owners exclusive rights so they can exclude others. And this, in turn, promotes the investments to create and to commercialize these creative innovations in the marketplace. And that promotes the public good. And as tempting as it may be to take away or limit IP rights so that others can copy and then call that competition, I would urge the members to think about whether that truly represents sound economic policy. The fact that the definition of unfair or deceptive practices would have to be changed shows that it's not really a competition law problem. I would recommend against micromanaging the free market system to pick winners and losers. The market does a great job of sorting this out already.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest, from California, Representative Doug LaMalfa. Where is the beef industry heading? Find out firsthand October 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine. It's Texas Cattle Feeders Association's annual convention featuring John Foley, a former Blue Angels pilot, and mentalist and illusionist Wayne Hoffman. The 2023 TCFA Annual Convention in Grapevine. Learn more online, tcfa.org.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
When it comes to the nation's cotton crop, not a lot of good news to report.
The trouble that we have seen with heat and drought on the southern plains continues to affect the national crop.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says as we start this week,
we see just 33% of the cotton rated good to excellent, 46% very poor to poor.
And that amounts to a 6% drop in overall cotton condition in just 1 week. And ironically,
if you take 13 of the 15 states, you'd be thinking this is a pretty good cotton crop. And that is true.
But crops in two of those 15 really are in bad shape. Rippey says, look at the number one cotton-producing state, Texas.
71% of the crop rated very poor to poor. Oklahoma has come on pretty quickly here with deteriorating cotton as well. Now 65% very poor to poor.
And Brad says there are concerns about possible wind damage to the Arizona crop from Hurricane Hillary, but that was Sunday, not reflected in this latest USDA report.
So we will have to wait and see how that turned out.
Gary Crawford, Washington.